This is Music Respawn. I'm Kate Remington with Brian Lee White and Brian Trifon, and together they're known as Finishing Move. And it's so great to be able to talk with both of you and find out about your soundtrack for Crackdown 3. So thanks so much for taking the time to talk about it.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
You know, this game, it's been kicking around for a while. I think one of the first times anyone saw it was at E3 in 2014. But it's finally here. It came out in February and Sumo Digital released it. And so I'm wondering how far along into the process you guys were brought in to be the ones making the soundtrack.
We were actually brought in pretty early on. I think we started talks with Microsoft, which is the publisher for the game, in 2014, 2015. It was early on. We started figuring out, talking about the style and just the initial discussions of what our involvement might be. And then as it developed, we dove in little bits, and with the development there was some delays, as you probably know. And so it was kind of a start and stop process that picked up steam as time went on.
Yeah, we were actually, it's 2014 GDC is when we started first having the conversations about doing the music with the audio director, Christopher Melroth at Microsoft. And yeah, it was a long process, but the cool thing about the delays, not for the fans obviously, but for us, is we got to write a ton more music than what was originally scoped for the game. I think originally we were planning on writing, when it was not delayed and was supposed to come out, I think in like 2016, 2017, we were going to write like 80 minutes of music, and I think we ended up doing over 4 hours. So we got a cool opportunity to sort of just keep adding to the world as they kind of delayed things to do polish and design fix-ups and stuff like that.
That is so cool, because a lot of times, the composers are brought in, not really at the last minute, but certainly not being able to work on a game for that length of time. So that's really cool. How much did the music change from when you first were brought on board to what you eventually ended up with?
Yeah, I think the music stylistically stayed pretty much within the same core of the initial discussions with Chris. Chris had this sort of vision of doing this kind of cinematic trap, kind of electronic cyberpunk kind of score. And we shared a lot of Spotify playlists back and forth and really kind of honed in on the direction that we wanted to take, and that pretty much stayed the same the entire time. The only thing that I think got iterated on a lot were things related to design. So if there was a character that changed during design, we might have to rethink that character's theme or track, or there were some just sort of practical design things, like we would try one thing and then we'd play test it, or something would change about that function over the course of the 4 years. And what we had originally kind of thought was going to work doesn't work anymore, because it completely changed that function in the game's either no longer there, or we had to kind of pivot and either go back to some of the music and repurpose it or write new music. But the actual stylistic core stayed pretty true, the whole time.
Early on in the discussions we had, we'd sort of share Spotify playlists of references of kind of what that cyberpunk cinematic, urban sound was. And we'd, just share different references and kind of figure it out. And so that never really changed that much from what we were originally planning.
the overall sound is just so cool. And I've just been listening to it just over and over, because it's the way that you guys keep mixing it up is so interesting. And we can talk about your GDC session from this year, because it's really a fascinating subject. And one of the things that I picked up on at the demo derby, in which composers can share like 1 minute samples of their music, and then the panel offers them, you know, really helpful suggestions. And one of the frequent suggestions was, don't be repetitive, you know, mix it up, and, you know, don't give people the feeling that they've heard this before, or they know where something's going. So, you know, throw in surprises and stuff. So is that kind of how you guys work too, as you were creating each of these cues?
So I think for a lot of these cues, we were trying to, where we would start is theme them around like the bosses. Basically, Crackdown 3 takes place on this island of New Providence, and it's controlled by this Terra Nova Corporation, which is this evil, like, company of corporate gangsters, and so the different like captains and lieutenants control different areas of on this island. And so what we wanted to do was theme the music around these bosses. And so what we'd do is write a piece of music with a specific boss in mind, that's just like, you know, like a 3 or 4 minute piece of music that fully explores all the different sounds and like melodic motifs and ideas, and make it where it has a lot of variation. So it's not just like a loop or a little segment. It was really trying to have a fully formed with thematic development and with surprises and things like that, and then sort of break that into smaller assets that can work.
Well, yeah, I mean, essentially the idea is we created what we would do to get buy-in from everybody at the studio side, is we'd create these sketches for each boss, or for sort of each thing we were going to approach. And then we'd use those as a sort of palette to extrapolate all their sounds for the game. So each boss, like Trifon said, has kind of a unique sound, unique themes and sound design elements to them. And so we'd sort of sketch out these 2 to 4 minute pieces to kind of say, here's what we're thinking. Do you like this? Do you want to change some stuff? And we kind of go back and forth. That was really helpful because, you know, a lot of times these boss elements would get sort of extrapolated out into the world. It could be 20, 30, 40 minutes of music, depending on how their design, how much their design needed, and how much interaction you'd have with them in the world. And instead of just sort of approaching each thing as a single cue, like each 20, 30 second loop or each stinger, we just thought it was an easier idea to kind of like develop the sound palette for each one of those and make sure each one of those sound palettes was unique. So it really themed the boss well. And when you heard these sounds in the world, you'd recognize where they were coming from. that ended up working really well. We kind of used those palettes to then create all the sound, and I think it really helps lend a cohesion to the game, especially in an open world game where, you know, you can kind of do anything you want in any order. And so when you're running around the world, it really helps to sort of have this branding for each one of the characters, so that you kind of know what forces are acting on you at any given time.
Oh, that is so cool. Yeah, I noticed that each one of the bosses has a very distinctive sound. And one of the ones that I just really jumped out at me is the one for Katala Vargas, because that rhythm and that opening melody, you know, it reminded me of like a Bach prelude in a way, because it's got that kind of Baroque busyness. And that one in particular, I thought was really, really cool. So what was it about that character that kind of inspired you to create that kind of a sound?
We were kind of going for this like horror trap, kind of like John Carpenter-esque kind of horror trap vibe. That's cool that it reminds you of Bach. But yeah, the idea was that it was this kind of really menacing, creeping, kind of scheming sound for her. She is the captain of industry, and so she sort of oversees the, there's two lieutenants that she oversees in the game. One is the mining lieutenant, and he's the one that's mining these rocks that they use to make Chimera. The other lieutenant is he controls all the sort of chemical processing plants. They process these rocks, I guess they mine, into this Chimera gas kind of substance that they use to kind of like corrupt people's minds. And so she's kind of oversees this whole sort of manufacturing operation of this Chimera. She's kind of like a mad scientist. And it, I don't know, it just kind of really, that vibe just really fit her and kind of works really well when you play that final boss in the game. She's in kind of this mech suit kind of thing. And it, I don't know, it just feels really good.
Thank you.
does. And it, again, you know, it's such an unusual sound with, yeah, like the crazy organ and all of that stuff. Now I'm totally picking up on the horror trap vibe, because, yeah, you guys really nailed it. So you've got cues for a couple of the bosses, Kuli Nagata and Reza Khan, and it sounds like for both of them you were sort of borrowing some world music sounds. And so I was just wondering what it was about their characters that you really wanted to amplify with your music for them.
Yeah, I mean, Kuli is kind of like a middle, Pacific Islander descent character. And so there's like some kind of like chants and things like that in his that kind of mirror some of the sort of Pacific Island native chanting. Chris had an idea for that, and he said, hey, would it be, he sent us some YouTubes and was like, hey, this might be cool if we kind of incorporated some of those elements. And then Reza Khan, he's kind of nobody's actually there. Nobody's from like real places in this world. It's kind of a fake multi-ethnic kind of, post-apocalyptic island that everyone lives on. But yeah, for Khan, he's kind of, it's more like Indian Middle Eastern vibes that we incorporated some elements, like some vocal samples and things like that. yeah, we tried to with some of the bosses, because there's this big kind of pan-ethnic kind of feel to the game and to the characters, because it's kind of like this is the last place on Earth that has power, is this island, and so everybody is being shipped in from all over the world, because Terra Nova blacked out the world, and this is kind of the last place with their civilization. And so in a lot of the thematic elements for the different bosses, we try to incorporate just some nods to kind of world sounds and things like that to kind of give it that flavor without being sort of overtly, we're not sort of trying to rip off any specific ethnic music or anything like that.
Yeah, the overall sound of it though is, yeah, it's very blended, and yet you do get little whispers and little hints of music from these various cultures, which is just really interesting. And again, you know, it keeps the soundtrack from obviously being repetitive and very samey, which is, you know, no one wants that. So, you know, the idea of music for a boss battle, you know, every composer comes at it from a different angle. And what I loved about your music for the bosses is it almost sounds like you can dance to it. I mean, you could really dance to it rather than being, you know, these big kind of churning epic cues. And so as you were designing the music for the bosses, and things were, you know, because things always escalate with the bosses, you kill the minions and then there's more. So what was your process to write the music, you know, for the boss battles?
Yeah, I mean, I think for the bosses too, and what you're saying in terms of the style and it being, you know, something that you could almost dance to, we wanted it to have like a visceral sound, but also like the game is more or less, you know, one of the characters you can play, Jackson, is, you know, and he's voiced by Terry Crews. It's more or less like a Terry Crews simulator. And we wanted it to feel like, you know, this is music. If you were Terry Crews and you're jumping around on rooftops, you know, and blowing things up, that would be really visceral and exciting and, you know, lively too. And so I think, you know, stylistically, that was one of the things we were thinking about, was just to really to have it be, it's like it's visceral and it's epic, but it's fun too, and it's and modern sounding.
Yeah, it doesn't take its, I mean, the game itself is not really taking itself super seriously. Like, you can throw cars and jump over buildings and do all kinds of crazy stuff. And so the idea with you know, these boss battles is we kind of wanted to hint at these elements during the world and those themes. And then when you finally fight the boss, you get this like super blown out trap, like 808 club music almost. It's very cathartic to fight the boss to these huge beats. And it was a really bold choice. I mean, because we could have gone just sort of with the typical epic orchestral hybrid kind of score. But I mean, from the get-go, the audio director, Chris, and us, we decided that, like, no one's ever really done this. We want to kind of take this different approach and see how it works. And I think it lands really well. It's super fun to play these bosses and kind of have this modern bass music playing. It's almost like we took the approach of, well, what do people do anyways when they're playing shooters? They like mute the orchestral music and they put on like their favorite, you know, dubstep track or the favorite hip hop track or rock track. It's like, well, why don't we just, let's just create that experience for them.
and to add to that, like, one of the things, we wanted it to sound like music you might hear on the radio or in a club in the near future, but it to still function like a score where we could have the character themes and leitmotifs and you know, things that, that you can only get from a score, but stylistically it more to be like, you know, what you would hear on the radio or in a club.
Well, yeah, and the interactivity too. I mean, the reason why, you know, you could say, well, why didn't Microsoft just go license a bunch of music like they did in the previous Crackdowns? And the reason why that's difficult, there's a number of reasons, but specifically it's you don't have a lot of access to interactivity when you just license a piece of music. So in our boss battle music, I mean, we can escalate it over the course of the fight interactively. So it can change keys when you are almost about to the next sort of gate, or the health has gone down below 20%. You've completed certain objectives, so we can kind of really amp up the feel. And that's if you've played both the game and listened to the soundtrack, one thing you'll notice is we actually did separate soundtrack edits that make more sense for a soundtrack listening in the car. And there's separate edits that are a lot more interactive that go in the game. So the music does, it'll like change key, it'll change tempo and do all these kind of things that doesn't make as much sense out of context, like just listening to the soundtrack. So we kind of kept those are the club radio edits. And then in the game, when you play the game, it's actually highly interactive. So elements come and go. It really ramps up as you're completing the mission or the fight. And that's something that we designed. We laid that out specifically from the get-go, that we were gonna kind of do things to make it really cool when you're playing the game, and do things to make it really cool when you're just listening to the soundtrack.
One of the things that your GDC session covered this last time was how you created the music for this being an open world game. And I know you kind of covered that with taking elements from the bosses that you'd eventually fight and breaking them into loops. But I'm wondering what some of the other challenges were for making the exploration music for this huge world.
Yeah, so the thing about an open world game that's tricky is, especially this game, is that you can kind of do anything in any order. You can actually go after the final boss immediately. There's no loading screens, there's no different maps. You load into one big world and that's it. You're in that world. And so one of the challenges we had to try to tackle with music is, okay, so how do we inform the player and push them further in a narrative using music? And so the one thing you'll notice is when you're playing in the world, there's no just blanket explore music. You're never just going to hear music for no reason, just, you know, music for music's sake. The music always informs the player that, let's say, you're in a mission area and you have to complete a certain number of missions to draw out the boss to defeat them. So you might have to blow up a certain number of mining equipment or factories. And so when you enter in these mission areas, that's when you hear the tension, the music starts up. And the idea is to, along with sort of on-screen displays in the HUD, really sort of set the mood that you're in an area where we want you to do something to sort of further you along in this game. So that music really becomes this informational thing. And there's also, you know, music as a way to reward the player. So a big thing with Crackdown is you collect orbs and you level up. So we wanted to have music that was themed to the agency. Whenever you level up, you get this kind of little reward. Or when you die, you hear a little sort of sad song. So it's sort of this music as an informational device to kind of help the player, motivate the player to actually go and do stuff in the game instead of just, you know, running around and blowing up cars, which you can do too. And a lot of people enjoy the game that way. But yeah, that was kind of a challenge in an open world to how do we use music to sort of contain a narrative when people can do things in any order that they want.
Okay.
other thing that we did too was to is, you know, we did all the diegetic music, so the music that's coming from things in the world as well, to sort of add more life to the world. So it's not necessarily like score music, but you know, there's all these holographic advertisements throughout the world, and they, you know, are for different businesses and things that are in the world. And so we actually like created jingles for each of those. Like we did 50 of them, I think. Also for like, there's like restaurants and clubs and things like that. And so we did all the music for those as well. And in the world, in the game, they come out of, you know, it's all FUTs and it comes out of little speakers, but it's just a way to sort of add more life to the world. And it was a way to add humor too, especially with these advertisements and jingles. Like they're, you know, we kind of hammed it up, and they're kind of cheesy, corny, you know, advertisements. But that was another way we were able to use music and sort of add to the world.
Yeah. Have you written jingles before?
Oh yeah. Yeah. That's the world that we started in before games. Like, you know, before games, we were making records, and we're also doing music for commercials. So yeah, we have experience doing some, you know, stylistically cool commercials and a lot of cheesy stuff as well. So
mattress ads.
Yes.
That's a
something. In your GDC session, you also kind of talked about how you made the music work with the rest of the audio, and that's got to be a tough challenge because there's so much going on. You've got the sounds of the guns, sound of the world, and the coaching from these ops guys that are in your head. And so what were some of the decisions that you guys made so that everything would like be even and nothing would stick out or be, you know, like really intrusive?
Yeah, so for one, we actually did all the implementation ourselves in WISE. So we actually were the ones coding the music into the game. So we had a lot of control over just levels and things like that, and how the music would transition, when it would come in, when it would drop out, and that kind of stuff. So we really got a chance to sort of iterate and polish that and compose around that, so sort of iterate and test and then change things. And the other thing that we did, we actually decided on this really early on, is there's a stem mixing system in the game, and we don't actually use that for interactivity. We use that for mix clarity. So all the tracks are broken into three stems. So there's drums, there's bass, and then there's sort of everything else, melody, I guess you could call it. And the idea there is that we would be able to dynamically duck or filter individual elements around dialogue or explosions. So a perfect example is when an explosion happens, what we might want to do is we might want to sort of high pass filter the drums and the bass because they have a lot of low end, but just enough so that the explosion has clarity and then you don't even notice this happening in the game. When dialogue happens, we use sort of real-time ducking of frequencies that are sensitive to dialogue. So there's like a notch around 2K. One thing we didn't want to do, because the music is such a integral part of the experience, is we didn't want to do what a lot of games will do, is kind of this radio-style ducking, where it's just like wholesale ducking of all the music when dialogue comes in, and it just, you know, like you listen to the radio and the DJ comes in and the music just all drops down. We didn't want to do that. We wanted to retain the clarity. So we're not actually ducking all the elements. We're being very specific about how we duck things around certain elements. And the idea is that you shouldn't really even hear that happening. So the music sort of never goes away, but you still get all the clarity in the gunfire, the explosions, and the dialogue.
That's really cool because, yeah, it would sound odd if all of a sudden the music just, like you say, just ducked that much and you'd miss that mix. And so, yeah, I've noticed that it's so well blended. So that is very cool. Did you have to work at all with, like, tuning the music at all so that it would be, well, not really in the same key as like the guns or the voices, but at least there wouldn't be like a mismatch with, you know, high notes and then voices?
Sometimes we worked with the sound designers where they would want to know the keys that we were working in to avoid stuff that would clash. But with the, you know, selective frequency ducking that Brian was talking about, and then just, you know, being in coordination with the sound designers, it wasn't too much of an issue.
Yeah, I think there's certain mix things that you would do. Just it, and the same is true if you're dubbing a film. There's certain mix things that you're doing overall when you know the music is going to be sitting with dialogue and effects. And there's certain things that you wouldn't do if you were just going to have music to listen to by itself. And so that's something that we're always taking into account. You know, a lot of times, you know, in film or TV, there's the music gets a bit of a smiley face, a little bit more bass and a little bit more top end than you'd normally hear. That's because it's kind of sitting down with an ambient bed, and it kind of needs a little bit of extra weight not to sound wimpy and get lost. But yeah, we would take all those things into account when we were kind of doing the game mix and sort of testing it. But a big thing was just really, and this is a big part of what Chris did sort of on his end with the overall mix, you know, because he had to take all the elements, the dialogue, the effects, and the music, and kind of make them work together. But the play testing was a huge part of that, because you're constantly playing the game and thinking, how does this feel in context? And I mean, there's a ton of the times that I would play the game and go like, wow, that sounds super annoying. I'm going to go ahead and just get rid of that, because you're just, it'll be something that you don't really notice when you're just composing the music or listening to the music, but you're playing it in the game. You're like, man, the way that like little bell sound sticks out over and over, that has to get cut, you know? So stuff like that, it's like the whole iterative process of play testing and then sort of allowing that to inform the composition process. It's a big part of what we do.
Yeah. Well, what is your collaboration process like? I mean, you just like jam in the studio, or do you work in your studio separately and then get together and share stuff?
So we work in our studio separately, and it kind of depends on the piece and the project. So a lot of we're both capable, and sometimes we'll do a piece from just beginning to end. And then, you know, other times, you know, we'll start on something and you reach a point where, and this is just true in any, I think, creative process, where you hit a plateau and you're kind of like, I don't know. And what's nice about, obviously, there being two of us is that, you know, then we can pass it back and forth. So I can start an idea, send it over to Brian White, and, you know, get his take on it, and, you know, or vice versa. And so, you know, it sort of depends.
Yeah, it's definitely like it, you know, we try to use the takes a village approach. We also have a full-time assistant, Jay, that works with us. He was a huge part of this score. Yeah. So definitely got a shout out to him.
Yep.
But yeah, I mean, it really depends on what our workload is and sort of where within that workload, where does everyone's strengths lie? I spent a lot of time on this game just doing all the implementation and mixing and play testing and things like that. So whenever I was like really buried deep in fixing bugs and things like that, you know, Jay would be really helpful. I could just, you know, send him a message and say, hey, I need this element. I need you to turn this up, turn that down. I need you to print me out a stem in this key or change the tempo of this. And it just sort of to have kind of a group of people kind of all working in harmony and all really familiar with each other's workflow it's a huge part of being able to do these big projects. And I think a lot of times, you know, you see composers, a lot of times in film and TV, they'll kind of, you know, they'll be the face of everything. They'll do the interviews. But what a lot of people might not know is, like, you know, some of these guys have 10, 20 people working behind them, depending on how many shows or films they're working on at one time. And it's always, you know, kind of this big team effort, because it's doing, you know, if you're going to do, you know, 4 hours of music for something, it's a lot of music. And that's not even, you know, when you compare it to like these guys that do like an hour of TV music per week. It's, you know, it definitely, like, it can take a village to really kind of get everything done at that scale.
And it's a lot of specialized skills too. And I think, you know, as we've worked together, you know, Brian and I and Jay, like, even though we can all do sort of all of these things ourselves, you know, when you work together, you kind of end up specializing so that it's more efficient. And so a lot of times, like, you know, one of my strengths is in the musical sound design, like designing sounds that are really unique and emotional or interesting that, you know, Brian White and Jay can use for like, you know, in any of these pieces. And you know, Brian White has is like an amazing mixer, and you know, he has like the best mixing skills of any of us. And you know, Jay really has his ear to the ground with like what's like the cool stuff of the moment. And so I think it's really cool to be able to just combine all of those things and specialize too, to be able to really get stuff done fast, but have a quality level that's really, really high too.
I was going to say, I mean, I think one of the things that we really pride ourselves on is sort of our unique sound, that we're always bringing something that you've never heard before, or a unique texture or take on something to the projects that we work on. Our musical sound design is really something that we stand behind. And I think, you know, what allows for that to happen is this kind of specialization that we'll go into, because, you know, Trifon, he can be working on like really cool special sounds, but then I can be actually laying them out and getting the cue done. And I think a lot of times, you know, some of our friends, they might not have the same luxury, you know, like they just got to get stuff done. So they'll have to pull from, you know, a patch from Omnisphere, or just, you know, something off the shelf, which is totally fine. And we use that stuff too. But one thing that we sort of originally set out to do is like, hey, let's always make time and space in the design of our workflow for coming up with like totally bespoke sounds that no one else is going to have, that's going to just really lend that extra something special to everything we do.
Yeah. So what are some of like your go-to plugins or pieces of equipment so that you can really get that sound you're looking for?
Yeah. So, I mean, one of my favorites is there's a company, it's a French company called UVI that makes a plugin called Falcon, and it's more or less a sampler, but it has a lot more DSP features as well. So the standard sampler that almost everyone uses is Native Instruments Kontakt, and we use that as well. But Falcon, you can really do some manipulation of sounds that is just crazy. And so a lot of what we like to do is record both just, you know, real instruments like guitar and bass and manipulate them, or even synthesizers, and then load those into a sampler and start building from there. And so, yeah, UVI's Falcon, I think, is for the last 2 years has kind of been my go-to for just, you know, musical sound design fun.
yeah. And the Kima too.
Then I also have, it's a hardware system by Symbolic Sound called Kima. And it's basically, it's kind of like, it's like object-oriented, like Max MSP or Reactor. But it's hardware accelerated, so you can do stuff in real time that really would crush the CPU on your computer. So it's really cool for doing like, I use it a lot for doing like spectral resynthesis, which is very computationally heavy, but it allows you to really control it in real time with this Kima system. So that's something that I do a lot of crazy sounds with. It's a lot of fun.
We made our own instrument actually back when we were working on Halo Wars. We made a Kontakt instrument called Posthuman that we developed. We actually still use that quite a bit ourselves, but you can go out and buy it. But we actually developed that, prototyped that when we were working on Halo Wars. And it turned out so cool. We're like, hey, maybe we should try to polish this up and put that out into the world. And that's actually been really cool, because a lot of people will, you know, they'll use it and be like, oh my God, this is great. And that was just a fun project to work on, to kind of try something different, like actually go make some sounds and then try to sell that out in the world. But really the most useful part of that was we use it ourselves. So, you know, I think anytime we're making stuff, we're always thinking about like, you know, what do we want and what do we want to use?
Yeah. Cause you're starting with millions of colors, and then to narrow it down so that you get just the right palette for a project. I mean, that must be kind of a fun process.
Yeah. I mean, I was going to say, I think the thing that, you know, we have to do, I mean, we come from a different background than most, let's say, orchestral composers, where you know your tool set, you know your timbres, you know how the sort of different instruments in the orchestra get arranged to create different colors. And we're approaching that from more of the electronic recordist standpoint, sound design standpoint, and how can we open up our compositions to even more colors and timbres than you would get just, you know, with specific instruments. You know, how can we combine things into stuff that you've never heard before? And that's really kind of where we are most comfortable, right? Is trying to kind of create things that, you know, go beyond your traditional arranging techniques and create stuff that people have never heard.
Yeah, it's such a cool sound. And one of the moments when it really comes together is in that boss battle that you guys touched on a while ago. But the track, The Kingpin, it works so well in the game as it's kind of ramping up. But what really struck me about it listening in the soundtrack is it's in three rather than, you know, a typical two or four beat. And that gives it so much drive. And you guys pulled in all these elements with the chorus and everything. So that one in particular, it is one of my favorites. And that one, it must have been a fun cue to work on.
Yeah, that Kingpin cue was really cool. And especially being in the, you know, three like that, it has that sort of perpetual momentum to it. And one of the things that's neat about that is there's, like, you know, this Kingpin musical sound design element that we called, like, the Kingpin Womp. It's like a kind of sound that, you know, that it's very menacing. And any time that even before the battle with the Kingpin, like any time that there's, you know, she appears in the world, and like that there's that sound associated with it. And so that was like, it was, you know, it was really cool to design that sound and to use the choir elements in there. Yeah, that was an interesting track.
The Womp, if you listen carefully, it's the first thing you hear when you boot up the game. There's a subtle that sample that we created, actually created like years before, and it was part of this track called Betamax that came out on an album we did called Hype Scene, and that ended up getting sort of that track got adapted into the menu music called Nimbus. So we adapted that with some themes for Crackdown, and then sort of the bassy womp sound that you hear at the beginning of that and then throughout that song, then kind of that got hijacked and put into the Kingpin, because that was just I Chris heard this sound that he's the one that labeled it the womp. I think what we would probably call it a Reese bass or something like that, but now we all just call it womps. A Bram is what sort of like a Hans Zimmer style trailer composer would call it. He picked out that sound, and it was funny. He's like, yeah, just give me that sound, break me off that sound. I just want to like start putting it around the world to be the Kingpin signature. And so that kind of one thing led to another, and that's just kind of a cool sort of behind the scenes story of how, you know, how these tracks, they don't just get created in a vacuum, you know, like one thing will lead to another. We're not making them all at the same time. And so the tracks themselves will influence each other, will share sounds between them. And that kind of lends to this overall coherency. So even though each boss has their own very distinct sound, we think that as a world, it all kind of fits together, and there's through lines in the score that kind of tie everything together.
Yeah, and it also is a great illustration of why it's so cool to be, you know, kind of on the same wavelength as the audio director, because then all these great ideas can like spawn from that, and you don't feel like you're fighting with them. You know, you're all like collaborating, which is cool.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's huge. I think Chris is great, and from the beginning, we're on the same page. He was a huge part of this. The sound and it, the style that the soundtrack is.
I don't think it could have happened without his advocacy. I mean, because it's a bold move to go like, oh, we're going to create like a cinematic trap bass music score for a AAA video game, which typically would, you know, they're looking for, you know, like the kind of stuff we do on the Halo franchise, like the big sweeping epic orchestral kind of stuff, and which is cool. But yeah, Chris was a huge advocate for like, nope, we're going to do this crazy thing. It's going to sound like club music, and I'm going to shield and protect you guys from anybody who says otherwise. And that, like having an advocate like that at the game studio with that kind of just with the power to and the ability to sort of fight for what he wants and what we decided on was just a huge asset to us, and getting this score and seeing it through the whole 4 years of development.
Wow. Yeah, the sound of it is just so fantastic. And clearly you guys were like super into it. And I was just wondering if you could pick out maybe what was the most fun for you about making the soundtrack.
I mean, I think so the most fun as like kind of a comic relief, I think, was the jingles throughout the world. But I mean, I guess in terms of, I think, you know, I like also just from the soundtrack, the one that you pointed out, the Catala Vargas, just I think is such a cool track. Like, and, you know, that's the one that I love listening to. I love putting that on and you know, enjoyed working on too.
I'm just going to shout out to what the fans seem to be loving, like by a order of magnitude is Jackson's Jam. And that's Terry Crews's theme song. And that was really fun to write because that was like, hey, let's do some throwback kind of hip hop, but, you know, make it super modern and huge. And so that was kind of a cool song. And people really seem to like Jackson's Jam quite a bit. So I'm going to say Jackson's Jam is the most fun.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so cool. Brian Lee White and Brian Trifon, it has been so much fun talking with you. I really appreciate you taking the time to really break down how you made this incredible score. So thank you so much.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks.